Come and see the fabulous and fabled Suzanne Bartsch.
I'm drawn to people that make statements with their looks.
The LGBT community loves the holiday season. Sparkly affairs, divas, gay times, and seasonal music.
Merry Christmas, Maggie Thatcher. May God's love be with you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Chile's Supreme Court rules that marriage is a human right. Suzanne Bartsch tops New York nightlife. And tuneful queer time travel traces holiday traditions. All that and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending December 8, 2018. Equality advocates in Chile are celebrating a decision by the country's Supreme Court that access to civil marriage is a human right. The text of the High Court ruling, translated from a report in El Desconcierto, reads in part that constitutional norms and international convention provide that every person who lives in the state of Chile is the holder of the right to marry and found a family. The court also specifically held that marriage rights are open to all eligible citizens regardless of nationality, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Juan Enrique P. is president of the Equality Foundation, an NGO promoting the full inclusion of LGBTQ people in Chilean society. The government cannot ignore this definition when talking about human rights, he said, especially in the face of the injustices that are still committed in the regulation of families made up of same-gender couples. Chile is in the jurisdiction of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, which ordered in January that civil marriage be open to same-gender couples in every nation in the region without equality. And that's most of them. And the Inter-American Court ruling seems to make equality a foregone conclusion in every country that signed the American Convention on Human Rights. Along with Chile, that includes Barbados, Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Panama, Paraguay, Peru, and the Dominican Republic.
The African News Agency reported this week that South African lawmakers have passed a bill that removes the opt-out choice for government marriage officers that allowed them to refuse to wed same-gender couples on the basis of conscience, religion, and belief. That provision was seen as necessary to getting the original marriage equality legislation approved in 2006. But the Home Affairs Department found in a recent review that almost 88% of its marriage officers had claimed the exemption, which a spokesperson for the ruling African National Congress called disturbing. According to the news report, the measure passed in the National Assembly on December 6th after it had been approved in the upper house with the support of most parties in both chambers. An MP from the Democratic Alliance Party said that, "If you are an employee of the state, you must serve all citizens. You do not have the right to pick and choose which law you want to follow." Critics, however, lamented concessions that were made to secure passage, most notably that the Home Affairs Department be given a 24-month transition period for its officers to be retrained before the Civil Union Amendment Bill can take effect. But, such as it is, the bill awaits an expected presidential signature.
The governments of Hungary and Poland scuttled a queer-inclusive equality declaration by the European Union on December 6th when they insisted on the removal of LGBTIQ from the draft version. The joint statement by the body's Employment, Social Policy, Health and Consumer Affairs Council about equality in the digital age now only refers to gender equality and youth. This is not the first time that one or both Eastern European countries have forced equality declarations by the EU to be watered down to, at best, include sexual orientation, if any reference to LGBTIQ people is made at all. The Hungarian and Polish governments insist that their positions simply reflect the values of their conservative, heavily Roman Catholic societies. Austria now holds the revolving presidency of the Council of the European Union. It responded to the outrage expressed by the representatives of 19 countries because the two holdouts had doomed the well-intentioned document that required unanimous approval. Austria issued a statement that calls on EU countries to support young people in strengthening their digital competences and self-confidence in using digital technologies, as well as in improving their online and social media literacy by taking steps to create and support an inclusive, safe, and non-discriminatory online space for all, including young LGBTIQ persons. But it's only classified as a presidential conclusion, which doesn't carry the official weight of a formal council resolution.
U.S. President Donald Trump appointed as spokesperson for the Department of Justice a woman who comes from what the Southern Poverty Law Center calls an anti-queer hate group. The Alliance Defending Freedom represented that Colorado Christian Baker in the Supreme Court case that ruled narrowly in their favor. U.S. Solicitor General Nell Francisco represented the Trump administration in oral arguments he delivered in support of the Baker. The ADF recently submitted a brief in a pending case to the High Court supporting the segregation of transgender students at public schools with their own bathrooms and locker rooms to alleviate any discomfort among their cisgender peers. Carrie Kupak was named director of the Office of Public Affairs at the U.S. Justice Department as part of the reshuffling necessitated by the ousting of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who himself was an entrenched homophobe. Kupak represented the Alliance Defending Freedom at an anti-LGBTQ rally in November last year, telling the assembled homophobes that the belief that marriage is a man-woman union has been held since the beginning of time, and claimed that enforcing anti-discrimination laws would drive out Christians, Muslims, and Jewish people from the public square. She also reportedly spent time at the White House helping to get Brett Kavanaugh confirmed in the U.S. Senate as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Pink News charged other ADF leaders with supporting the long-debunked view that all gay people are pedophiles and claimed that the group actively supported the criminalization of same-gender sex in Belize. Kupak has attacked the hate group label by calling the well-respected Southern Poverty Law Center a radically left-wing, violence-inciting organization.
But England's Department for Education released statistics in mid-November revealing that 1 in 8 adoptions this year have been by same-gender couples. In raw numbers, 450 of the 3,820 children adopted in England in 2018 are being raised in same-gender couple-headed households. While the number of overall adoptions in the country has gone down since 2015, adoptions by lesbian and gay couples this year are the highest on record. Same-gender couples, more often than not, also adopt older or special needs children who are difficult to place. Tor Doherty of the advocacy group New Family Social told reporters that, "We're thrilled to see agencies consistently recognizing that LGBT people play a key role in helping transform the lives of our most vulnerable children." While negative attitudes still persist in some quarters, Doherty added, "Over 3,000 children and young people in England now live with their LGBT adoptive parents, proving that we can and do parent successfully." The UK granted same-gender couples the legal right to adopt children in 2002. According to the British adoptions site Pink Parents, it's one of only 14 countries in the world to do that.
In the results of another study released this week, a University of Oklahoma sociologist found bisexual people to more likely be politically liberal than other groups. The survey by Meredith Worthen, published in Sexuality Research and Social Policy, looked at political perspectives among lesbian, gay, bi, and heterosexual students. It further divided heterosexual people into mostly heterosexual and exclusively heterosexual in its review of the attitudes of students in the southern United States. It's no surprise that social justice was more important to lesbian, gay, and bisexual people than those who have claimed to be exclusively heterosexual, whom the study named as tending to be the least politically liberal. It also concludes that the reason queer people are more likely to be politically liberal is because of their collective experience of oppression. Worthen also said the mostly heterosexual group of people are a growing invisible group on college campuses. She believes accounting for this group of people fills a gap in the existing literature in this area of study.
And finally, the man who made a Facebook Live video burning queer-supportive children's books that he'd borrowed from the Orange City, Iowa Public Library has been criminally charged. Court documents allege that Paul Doerr, a Northwest Iowa fundamentalist Christian activist, burned the books on October 19th to protest the first day of the city's LGBTQ Pride Festival. According to local TV station KCRG, Doerr was seen in the 30-minute video preaching and burning the books Two Boys Kissing, This Day in June, Morris Micklewhite and the Tangerine Dress, and Families, Families, Families. Library documents prove that Doerr checked out the four books on October 6th. He's been charged with fifth-degree criminal mischief, a misdemeanor. While what Doerr did is no laughing matter, one can't help but think of that hilarious Seinfeld TV episode, guest starring Philip Baker Hall, as the appropriately named Mr. Bookman, library cop.
Let me tell you something funny, boy. You know that little stamp? The one that says New York Public Library? Well, that may not mean anything to you, but that means a lot to me. One whole hell of a lot.
Bookburning Doerr's initial appearance is scheduled for January 22nd at the Sioux County Courthouse.
What is your problem?
What's my problem? Punks like you, that's my problem. You better not screw up again, Seinfeld, because if you do, I'll be all over you like a pit bull on a poodle.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending December 8th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the alwaysupdatingthiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Thank God it's Christmas!
And thank God there's inclusive holiday music by LGBTQ artists later in the program.
When I go to a nightclub, you know, I'm not going for the fire that's coming out of the walls. Yeah.
Suzanne Bartsch, On Top, is a dreamlike documentary on the queen of New York City nightlife, whose self-expression has set the trends for a host of artists and for the city itself. This Way Out cultural correspondent John Dyer V caught a screening, and it inspired his own self-expression.
Living life is hard. You know, we have to go through all sorts of ups and downs in life, and to get through it in a positive way isn't always easy.
Come and see the fabulous and fabled Suzanne Bartsch. Marvel and wonder at her unbridled imagination and her seemingly Herculean work ethic. Learn how a straight-laced young woman from the land of clocks, that's Switzerland to you and me, wound up to become the preeminent post-Warhol and Studio 54 era Manhattan nightlife event and party planner. Make that party maestro. Maestra? The night your reporter saw the screening of last year's guilty pleasure documentary, Suzanne Bartsch, On Top, and yes, the gay title pun is definitely on purpose, as she is no shrinking violet. The lady herself was in attendance. Modestly clad in a tight-fitting, head-to-toe, gold-sequined jumpsuit, crazy tall heels, and a large black fall-style ponytail cascading from off the top of her head, it's a good guess that this is a pretty typical outfit for Suzanne. As one of her many acolytes observes, she is an enthusiastic and enduring legend. Another friend and co-worker opines, her contributions to the world happen late at night.
I'm drawn to people that make statements with their looks.
To a group of artists and drag queens rehearsing an event taking place on large floating rafts in an old New York City indoor swimming pool.
You could be like that, but no swimming.
RuPaul's first professional MC gig was thanks to Suzanne. And we see young Ru being ever fabulous at that event. And then we have current Ru praising her foresight in picking him out all those years ago.
Suzanne Bartsch was the one who championed me and said, you have got a future. You are something special. More than any other time in my life, that's when I needed to hear that.
One can't help but wish to be just a small part of that hip, glam, slightly dangerous world. Her assistant Brandon Olson explains, she puts on full-scale theatrical assaults. Starting her career in a funky London fashion boutique, Ms. Bartsch fell in love with the spectacular and ever-changing looks found there. Upon moving to New York City in 1981, she missed those UK garments and began importing them to great acclaim. Suzanne then began promoting club events in 1986 and was again a huge success, despite her admission that the business of nightclubs ain't gonna make anybody rich. Today, she still lives in the notorious and historic Chelsea Hotel in New York City. The dramatic thrust of the film has to do with Ms. Bartsch's upcoming career retrospective, Fashion Underground, The World of Suzanne Bartsch, at the Fashion Institute of Technology. We see her preparing for the gala event, in between working on and traveling to her other event productions, all while listening to her droll asides. While getting made up for the gala, she cracks to her makeup artist, "Make the old bag look 20. Another time, while being interviewed at home and cooking a dish that isn't quite ready, she shuts it back in with a, "Back in the oven, bitch." Or my favorite, when something goes wrong with a planned evening out, "No cock tonight, baby." On a personal level, we meet and learn about Suzanne's hot former bodybuilder husband, David Barton. To say their wedding was memorable and strange is beyond understatement, but Suzanne's bridal dress absolutely defied expectations, fully met them, and then far exceeded them. It is interesting to note that the pair have remained friends since splitting. We also meet the light of her life, their son, Bailey. Bailey is as normal as his mother is avant-garde, and it's fascinating to hear him describe the weirdness of being around his mother when she is playing the character of Suzanne. A recurring theme is that she doesn't want to be normal, she wants to be more than that.
You seriously want to body paint your leg, pink?
I'm just thinking, you know. You know what I don't like about it? It's not really pink. I know it's pink, but it's not a pink that I feel pink in.
Though Bailey had what must have been the world's coolest childhood, he is completely down to earth and just not into the whole club scene. Later, delving into Suzanne's youth and what possibly influenced her amazing ability to successfully straddle two quite different worlds, she admits, "My father was clearly capable of living a double life." We later see Suzanne at the gala retrospective speaking to Bailey on her cell phone. Wishing he were there, she tells him, "You give me a purpose." Fabulous talking heads also share anecdotal histories of Suzanne, her work, and how they came to be part of her super cool crew. We see she is regimented, sometimes tough, obviously incredibly smart, and has energy like a dynamo. Her attitude is the real appeal. How can one resist the siren song of a lady who believes that being in the moment is spiritual? Also saying, "We really don't believe in the bullshit of society." Also, how can one resist a spirited and Valkyrie tall woman who runs around in a sleek club outfit with a merkin on it? Hysterical. The world needs that. This is also the woman who, in reaction to the sudden bewildering AIDS crisis in the 80s and the nefarious indifference afforded those humans afflicted with the disease, came up with the idea of the Love Ball benefit in 1989. Held on May 10th at the world-famous Roseland Ballroom, the event featured the newly topical practice of dance moves called voguing, and it netted almost $500,000 for the Design Industries Foundation for AIDS. Like the fellow once said,
"Everybody's here. I just saw Michael Musto."
I've covered Suzanne Bartsch from her very beginning. She's been the queen of New York nightlife from the second she started.
The film is smoothly directed by Alexander Smith and Anthony Corona, with a brisk running time of 86 minutes. The young directors maintained they shot so much footage, the movie's running time could easily have been 7 hours. Thanks to them, it's quite lovely to meet in Suzanne Bartsch a person who accepts, embraces, and celebrates true self-expression, the outsiders who were shunned just for being different, and gender in all its glorious forms. So 3 cheers for Suzanne Bartsch, whether observing soberly that her historic AIDS fundraiser was, quote, all about right now, or cracking wise about an outfit that, if they're looking at your feet, there's something wrong. She is an honest-to-God original. After the documentary's screening, they held an after-party at the Standard Hotel on the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles, of course, and before leaving, I stood a little before her path as she casually yet seductively made her way around the room. Glancing at me, she gently reached her hand out for me to shake it, which I did. It was awesome. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
Happy whatever you're having. Wish me happy whatever I'm having too.
Share some holiday cheer and get some unique gifts when you
promote a homosexual agenda
by visiting thiswayout.org during this happy giving season. Thank you. If you find yourself eating too much during the holidays, This Way Out Music Focus correspondent Steve Sims knows how you feel. Steve decided to take on the history of Christmas music and discovered how easy it is to bite off more than one can chew.
Oh, oh, oh.
The LGBT community loves the holiday season. Sparkly affairs, divas, gay times, and seasonal music.
Anytime with your friends and your family,
it's Christmas time.
When Santa was a pagan.
Christmas can be traced back to Saturnalia, the ancient Roman festival dedicated to the fertility god Saturn. Saturnalia was quite a queer festival, with rumors of naked frolicking festival attendees, cross-dressing, role reversals, food, wine, and fruitcakes.
Through the olive tree softly did blow, round little Beth.
Music associated with Christmas came along around the 4th century in Rome. By the 13th century, under the influence of Francis of Assisi, popular Christmas songs in regional native languages had started to be developed. Christmas carols in the English language first started appearing in the 1400s.
Merry gentlemen.
The 16th century brought us the 12 Days of Christmas, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, and O Christmas Tree.
Four domains, three observations, two SGOs, and a classroom with our own.
The Victorian era, through a renewed admiration of the Christmas holiday, gave us songs like Silent Night, O Little Town of Bethlehem, and O Holy Night.
So.
St. Nicholas and other gift bringers came along in the 19th century, putting songs like Up on the Housetop and Jolly Old St. Nicholas under our trees. The early part of the 20th century was a grinch about holiday music. But the Great Depression changed that. With Our Hearts Bigger, we saw the emergence of songs with an American origin, with more secular traditional themes and customs associated with Christmas. Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer arrived, and with it, the sentimental, ballad-type songs performed by famous crooners of the era. Songs from the post-World War II era generally mirrored those from the early 20th century. But with the rock era of the 1950s, along came songs geared to the audiences of popular music, songs with romantic overtones that included Christmas as the setting. The 1950s also introduced novelty and satirical songs that were geared towards making people laugh.
Day.
Christmas lights on the doorway to the kitchen. Memories pass from
Merry Christmas.
one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heat. You're as cuddly.
As we've moved into the 21st century, we've acquired holiday songs that expose us to other faiths. This is the Happy Holidays or Season's Greetings genre. Songs of inclusion. Something we in the LGBT community work hard to achieve.
It's Christmas time in Maryland for this Montgomery County Jew.
Christmas, if we keep the commercialism in perspective, is a time of selfless, friendly, kind actions. People are nicer, and the seasonal music has a way of sending that message into your body and your soul.
Yes, it's Christmas! Thank God it's Christmas!
All the music in today's segment has been performed by LGBT artists. You can go to questoflife.org and get a playlist of the songs. You can also find out more information about other holiday music from LGBT artists. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Merry Christmas!
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Carol Myers, produced with Brian DeShazer and Steve Sims. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can lend a hand by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WLRI Christiana, Pennsylvania, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, 3OCR Colac, Victoria, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.